Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
No Danny today on G&D. Pete Medhurst hanging out. 106.7 The Fan. It's a Football Friday. We are presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Charlestown. Every game, every bet, for real sports fans. You look at the NFL playoff picture right now and you see the New Orleans Saints, who have been a juggernaut under Sean Payton with Drew Brees at the controls for years, have a great chance to get back to a Super Bowl. They should have been there if not for getting robbed in the NFC Championship game last year. As of right now, they have the same record as 1-seed San Francisco, 2-seed Green Bay. Those two teams get first-round byes by way of tiebreakers. The Saints would be hosting the Minnesota Vikings coming off of a dud as they played on Monday Night Football against the Packers and fell to 10-5. New Orleans could still actually get a bye. But the question is, they're working out Antonio Brown today. How much different or better off would they be if they signed him, and is it worth some of the issues that could come along with that? Pete, without Antonio Brown, how do you see their postseason run going? And with him, how different would it be?
They are good enough without Antonio Brown, but I think things have to break even more perfectly because, as I said, Michael Thomas is their top wideout, and teams are going to do everything they possibly can to make sure he does not beat them. They're good enough, but I think other teams are just as good. You put Antonio Brown there, I think it really, really gives Drew Brees almost an unfair set of weapons if all those guys are healthy. And that's a big question with Kamara, too. I think there's no guarantee Kamara's close to 100% during this playoff run. So they're looking at this from another, hey, can we help? Antonio Brown's got no tread on him. I mean, he's as healthy as can possibly be. Fresh legs at this time of year.
They waited until now because they didn't have to make this move. And I think also because you don't want him coming in and necessarily ruining anything you've got going. Whereas after the regular season going into the playoffs, you bring him in and you say, listen up, man. You want a Super Bowl? Act right for a month. Don't be a clown shoe for 4 weeks, and you got a chance to win a Super Bowl. I think without him, they are as good as San Francisco and Green Bay and Seattle. They are, you know, in a dead heat, basically, for best team in the conference.
Mm-hmm.
With him, I think they become the favorites. I would probably pick them to beat Green Bay without him. I definitely would with him. I think San Francisco would be a big problem for them. But you have a better chance against that defense, which has not been as good over the last few weeks with Antonio Brown. So I'll understand if they sign him, but again, I think it'll be bad for the sport. And I think it would be a big shot for the NFL in terms of players dictating terms. I don't want the NFL to become the NBA. It's a fear that I've got. I think every time a guy like Odell Beckham Jr., you know, forces some trade or becomes some headache, and then he just lands on his feet after falling out the window with, say, Cleveland, and now he doesn't like Freddie Kitchens, so he'll run out of there, and he'll fall out that window. He'll land on his feet now in Kansas City or wherever, and he'll go catch 87 balls next year. Each time something like that happens, I think it is bad for the league, and the power swings a little bit closer toward the players.
To the Saints' credit, too, they have the best strength of victory in the NFC. So they've beaten good people as they are constructed.
Yeah.
And heading into the playoffs, they're the best team in terms of strength of victory out of the six out of the NFC. So from that standpoint, they could win as they're constructed. But at the same time, based on where the seeds are falling, Grant, they're going to have to go to Green Bay and possibly San Francisco,
right,
both, to win a championship.
But they'd be favorites in their first two games anyway.
You think they'd be favored at Green Bay?
I do. I think they're better than Green Bay. Green Bay gets 3 for being at home in the playoffs, maybe even 4, I don't know, because it's a frozen tundra. Outside, different than inside for the Saints. Drew Brees, I think, has only played outdoors maybe once all season, something like that. But, yeah, I think right now that's a better team than Green Bay. I think Vegas would have them a point or two favorite. I don't think they'd be a dog until they played San Francisco in the NFC Championship game, and that would be in a much more friendly environment and weather than the previous
week. Yeah. I mean, I would just say, I think the fact that they realize, hey, we may have to go on the road and win two huge football games is why they're looking to exhaust all opportunities here to strengthen their football team.
Yeah, because you said this off the top. Right now, the plan to beat the Saints should be to – you're not going to shut down Michael Thomas, but have him go like 5 for 57, basically. Yeah. Double him, bracket coverage toward him, and Ted Ginn is kind of a one-trick pony, not going to beat you. Tre'Davious White, a couple of those other wide receivers, some of them aren't even healthy, by the way, but the guys who have like 22 catches at wideout for them, those guys are not going to torch you. You want Josh Hill and Jared Cook to be your featured receivers? Fine. You better go on 11, 12 play drives to score touchdowns. And I think that's the plan against them. Antonio Brown would change that. I root against it because I find him to be so unlikable. Let's go to Steve in Fairfax on Grant and Danny, who's been waiting patiently. What's up, Steve? How are you?
Hey, great, guys. Thanks. Happy holidays. Appreciate taking my call.
Same to
you,
sir. You
know,
thank you.
Thanks, man. The New Orleans Saints thing, if it works out, first of all, they better put a clause in his contract about tweeting. Forget about the interviews, because I don't think he really says too much when he talks, but it's the tweeting.
So true.
If it does work out, it could be a Randy Moss-type, like, Patriot-type situation in the playoffs, especially if you have to go through that Superdome to get to the Super Bowl. That could be a real difference-maker. But I wanted to go back to something real quick. You guys talking about the Redskins. It would be the most Redskins thing to happen for them to beat Dallas, because I think Dallas has kind of quit, to be honest with you. I think they're tired of Garrett and all of that. But wouldn't it be the most Redskins thing if the Redskins won and then all the other teams like Detroit, New York, and Miami, they all lose, and then we lose draft positioning? And then another thing I wanted to get your take on,
and
Grant, is
like
Minutes. Yeah, you know, I mean, so guys, what if we do get Chase Young, right? Don't you got a feeling that everything's going to stay the same as far as the coaching staffs go? I have no faith in Minutsky. There's no way Minutsky is here next year that we will be successful on a defensive end. They've been historically bad the last couple of weeks. I mean, what you guys think about that?
Well, Greg Minutsky's not going to be here. I mean, let's say, and I don't think this is viable at all, okay? But just to play along, let's say they keep Bill Callahan because they decide that going 3-8 was a big improvement and they liked the growth of Dwayne Haskins with the heavy run game and not asking him to do a lot and the strides that he made, and they want to keep Kevin O'Connell, and the path to that is Callahan and O'Connell together. So let's say that happens. They still go get a defensive coordinator. And they would have to at that point, because otherwise fans would be burning down the castle. And it'll be a big name. They'll throw an outrageous amount of money at some guy like Rex Ryan. And I don't even know that he would want to be a DC. I mean, I don't think he's leaving the TV booth after being a head coach to do that. But my point is just a very accomplished big name who comes here and people are excited. Remember, they talked to a bunch of DCs last year, and one of the reasons I don't think they were able to make a hire was Jay Gruden was going into a lame duck season, and your coordinating candidates knew, well, this head coach probably doesn't last the season and certainly won't last beyond next year. So what happens to me? Well, now you've got a coach going into the first year of a contract. I think hiring a defensive coordinator would be easier. But to answer your question point blank, no, Minutsky's not back. I can't see that at all.
Do you think Rex would consider it if he could keep his brother on staff here?
Or you got why a better chance Rob? Than someone else. But I don't think Rob's done anything to write home about on this staff. I mean, anyone that's in the room right now, as far as I'm concerned, you can't sell to this fan base and say, hey, this guy was here while we were having all of our problems, but now all of a sudden it's going to go better, Brian McClellan, George McPhee style. I just don't think the Redskins have done anything to get the benefit of the doubt in that regard. It would look like you bring back Bill Callahan, Kevin O'Connell, and you promote one of your position coaches on defense. Good luck with your week one turnout next year. Ben in Rockville, you're on the fan. What do you got?
Hey, dude, I just want to comment on this whole AB, the Saints thing. I think this is way too premature because we already know the Saints are going to go to the Patriots. And the thing, though, too, is,
we know what this, you broke up. What'd you say?
We already know about this whole AB going to the Saints thing. It's just all speculation, quite frankly. And we also know that the Saints are going to talk to the Patriots. Usually, when an NFL team does their investigations, they go through a former, you know, FBI agent that still has top secret clearance, which means they're going to find out. Especially the Patriots that have all this money. We know they probably spent something on someone with the top secret clearance. So, and plus the NFL still conducting their investigation. This is all so premature.
But it's not that premature from this standpoint. Yes, they haven't signed him. He's working out with them today. you would do your research and your due diligence, and you have more information than I do about some Magnum PI situation. I don't know anything about that. But he's in their building. He's posting a picture of the waiver that he signed. This is not like someone said that the Saints are interested in Antonio Brown, and now we're all talking about it. He's literally working out for the team today. We know that. So you'd have to imagine they've made some of those phone calls you're talking about and done some investigating already. If they are welcoming him in for the distraction that is now them having to answer in the press conference and the reporters seeing him walking to and from the practice facility. Tony in Long Island, you're on G&D. How are you?
Hey, guys. Happy holidays. Happy New Year.
Same to you, pal.
Same. All right. Well, first and foremost, I mean, in terms of the Redskin-Cowboy game, I honestly believe this is really one of the biggest Redskin games in quite some time. To just extrapolate on what you said earlier about All-Pro in terms of a Redskin uniform, the last Redskin that was actually drafted by this franchise as a non-special teams player that has made the first-team All-Pro is Darryl Green and Joe Jacoby in 1991. That's almost 30 years ago. This team needs a generational player. And I don't want to hear about trading down because I had Josh Dotson in the middle of the first round. We've had John Allen in the middle of the first round. We had Daron Payne in the middle of the first round. Montez Sweat. None of these guys are moving the needle. None of these guys have changed anything in the building. Chase Young can change the direction of the franchise. A guy with this type of talent comes across once every 10 years, and that's maybe being generous with that. So I'm all in for the Redskins to lose this game, but like an earlier caller, Steve, said, I'm very worried that they're going to win this game because Dallas is in bad shape walking into this game, and I'm
but
nervous. I have a funny feeling.
They need this game. Thank you, buddy. Have a wonderful holiday. Always love hearing from you. They have to have it. I can't envision a scenario where a hungry Cowboys team loses to this Redskins group. I just can't, particularly without Terry McLaurin making plays. We can talk more about that next. 800-636-1067. Also, the latest on the coaches on the hot seat, a report that came out on what to expect come Black Monday in the National Football League. Who could be out of a job? Are there any names that could be of interest to the Redskins of the coaches who could get fired next week? We're Grant and Danny. Today, Pete is in for Danny. Coming up today on Grant and Danny, Carl Hagelin of the Capitals. They've got the best record in hockey. After their holiday break, they are back in action at Capital One Arena tonight. Many of you probably going to the game as they play the Columbus Blue Jackets. First of two games in a back-to-back. I'd say that the Capitals have been great at back-to-backs this year, Pete, but they've just been great in general. And people do this all the time where they go, you know, the Redskins aren't very good on Monday Night Football. Well, that's true. They're also not good at Sunday at 1 o'clock or Sunday at 4 o'clock. Like, the Redskins have a losing record at home over the last 5 years. They've got a losing record on the road in neutral site games and in Mars. The Capitals are really good at home, and they are great. Right now, they have the best record overall. And they're really good at back-to-backs, but they're really good whenever they play.
We take it for granted, so when they throw in a stunner like Monday against the Bruins where they just get, you know, lit up, you know, we take for granted because that just doesn't happen very much to this hockey team. So, you know, when they bring it most nights, even when they lose a close game, which hasn't been many this year. They've only lost seven times in regulation. That's only seven losses so far. Just seven.
Played about 40 games. Yeah, it's pretty
just innate. Seven. That's all.
Tremendous campaign. Nick Sundberg, speaking of campaigns, is trying to become the Walter Payton Man of the Year in the National Football League. Would be huge, huge honor for a guy who's done a lot of good locally. We'll talk to him about his quest for that distinction. And Paul Stone on college football, one of our favorite college football experts at 1:30 today, all coming up on Grant and Danny. But we wanted to get into the hot seat and the coaching carousel that has been spinning rampantly, who is in trouble and who could be safe come what is now called and phrased Black Monday in the National Football League. So Jay Gruden's already been fired and Ron Rivera is already out in Carolina. Those two jobs, as we already know, are the two where decisions have been made. But there are a bunch of guys who could be joining them on the unemployment line. The first stop we should make is in Cleveland, where everything publicly so far with the Browns has been basically a Freddie Kitchens endorsement without saying he'll be back. There's no reason to believe he's going to be fired based on any reporting yet. But if the Browns win, they go 7-9-1. They will be, 7-9 a year after they went 7-8-1. They'll be a half game worse than they were a year ago when Hugh Jackson got fired and then Greg Williams finished the season. Plus, a year ago, they were outscored by 33 points. This year, they've been outscored by 48. After the offseason they had, year two of Baker Mayfield, Kitchens was basically hired as the Mayfield whisperer. He's gotten worse. They had Landry and brought in Beckham. Their offense has gotten worse. They had an all-star defense where they made a bunch of additions to their defensive line. That unit got worse. Freddie Kitchens, a couple of times over, has shown terrible judgment wearing ridiculous T-shirts with silly things on them. He doesn't come off well in press conferences. He's just somewhat of like a bumbling guy. He doesn't have that same look and presence of your CEOs that you're hiring now with your McVays and your Matt LaFleurs and these young up-and-coming sharp coaches like Cliff Kingsbury. So that hasn't served him well either. How would Freddie Kitchens keep his job? I mean, he has been awful this season in Cleveland.
Well, the Haslam ownership is proven, you know, to be a little bit volatile through the years. But at the same time, the Maryland native John Dorsey's in charge of that ship now. So you've got a legitimate general manager with chops in that position. How does he examine what his coach has done this year? And does he really look like, man, this guy's really over his head, like Arizona thought Steve Wilks was and jettisoned him after 1 year? And Arizona had nowhere near the drama that you see like a soap opera in Cleveland. That's a soap opera there.
Every week is something else. I mean, it's embarrassing. It's very much like some of the bad years here. And you say all that, and it's not a debacle in terms of going 2-14. The Browns have had some 0-16, some 1-15s. But that was a playoff-built roster. That was a lot of talent. So I think he'll be out. I think he gets fired. What about you?
Wow. I think they'll give him one more year.
Yes. Oof. Wow.
I think they'll give him one more year.
I think his undoing will be that Baker Mayfield had such a bad season, and that was really the only reason.
But is
he
that
got
on
hired.
The coach or is that on the player? I mean, obviously, when you look at the film, I mean, you got to look at. I mean, obviously, there's weapons there. They have developed one of the leading rushers in the National Football League, in Nick Chubb.
It's been great.
So there's a positive.
It's on the player to answer your question, but Freddie Kitchens got hired partially because Baker Mayfield wanted him hired because he was the play caller and the OC, and he was the guy that got a lot of credit for Mayfield's development last year. So you don't get to get all that credit.
Well, that's who Jimmy Haslam has to go talk to.
Right, and Mayfield might still advocate for Kitchens, and that's where you could be correct. But, no, I'm not saying he's the reason Mayfield has struggled, but when you get the job because of how well he played as a rookie under you, Kevin O'Connell, Dwayne Haskins style, and then that guy takes a step back, I think it would reflect poorly on you. The next guy to talk about is Pat Shurmur with the Giants. Pat Shurmur's been a head coach for four seasons in the NFL. He went 4-12 and 5-11 in Cleveland, and he's now gone 5-11, and if they lose this weekend, 4-12 with the Giants. So his four seasons will be either 4 or 5-win years, and at the end of this weekend, he's going to be 18-46 as an NFL head coach. I'm not really sure how the Giants, after 2 years of Pat Shurmur, would advocate for keeping him, other than, same with Freddie Kitchens, if you just say he hasn't had long enough. Kitchens has only had one season, that's why you're bringing him back. Maybe you could say, you can't hire a coach and only give him 2 years. That's not enough time to turn a program around. But they'll have gone 5-11, and then a year later, 4-12. He's got a much worse resume in New York than Ben McAdoo, who they fired before the end of his second season, had.
I will say this. Bill Belichick had one winning season in 5 years in Cleveland. I'm not going to hold Cleveland against you, but I look at a team and I go, does this guy exude winning culture? Does this guy exude difference making as a coach? And I don't see that with him with the Giants. I say this all the time. Norv Turner is the perfect example. Grant, some guys are just great coordinators, great assistant coaches. When they're asked to administrate the entire thing, sometimes it's just a little bit too much for them. I think Pat Shurmur is one of those guys where the whole role is just too much for them.
Will he get fired or will he stay?
I think he gets fired, and if Gettleman stays, Ron Rivera is the coach of the Giants.
I think he gets fired as well. So we're adding to Gruden and Rivera, Kitchens for me and Shurmur for me. You are keeping Kitchens in Cleveland as of right now. There's a few other names to banty about. We could take Dan Quinn off the hot seat because Arthur Blank came out and said that both Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff are coming back in 2020.
That's good for the Redskins because the fewer teams out there making changes, the better chance you get to have a guy that could be a solid head coach.
Doug Marrone, in or out? Jason Garrett of the Cowboys, does he stay or does he go? And what about Anthony Lynn with the L.A. Chargers after their huge regression this season? You're listening to Grant and Danny. Pete is in for Danny on the Fan.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
G&D 106.7 The Fan. Danny's holiday break continues. Pete Medhurst is in. I'm Grant Paulson, thanking you for listening on this Football Friday, presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Charlestown. Every game, every bet for real sports fans. Hopefully you guys had a great holiday. We're going through the list of names on the NFL's coaching hot seat, and we're determining whether we think they'll be in or out come Monday. I have Freddie Kitchens getting fired by the Browns. Pete says they bring him back. I think the Giants axe Pat Shurmur. Pete agreed with that one. Let's move on to the Dallas Cowboys and Jason Garrett. Now, this is interesting because we don't yet know if they'll make the playoffs or not. I'll actually go out on a little bit of a limb and say it doesn't matter if they make the playoffs or not. I don't see any situation where Garrett is back short of them making the NFC Championship game, meaning they would have to win twice in the postseason, even if they beat the Redskins on Sunday. I think Garrett is cooked. He is done, and I think that's been the case for weeks. I will be really surprised if he's the head coach of the Cowboys in week one, which is disappointing because I want them to be led by Jason Garrett as a Redskins fan for as many years as possible. I want them to spend $40 million a year on Dak Prescott. I wanted them to give Ezekiel Elliott all the money as a running back. I think those are, you know, bad ideas for them, really good ideas for the Redskins. But I think Garrett is out.
I think Garrett's out as well. Jerry's seen enough of this movie. And even as much as because Jason's in place, Jerry can kind of do whatever he wants without, you know, getting any pushback, not like when Parcells was a coach down there or anything like that. I think Jason Garrett's definitely out. But I don't understand the love fest for people saying Jason's going to be out of work only a short amount of time, because if he's squandering this kind of talent, what makes you think he's going to go somewhere else with a less talented team and do good things?
Well, I think when you make the playoffs as often as he has as a head coach and your record is generally right around, you know, 9-7, 10-6 a bunch, his bad years are generally super competitive. Now, you and I know that's because they've had a good roster. That's a winning team. He probably got less out of a good group than more out of a bad group. But I just think when you send in your resume to someone and it says the record that his will and your average season, you generally get a second gig out of that. Now, that's not a guy who went 5-11 or 3-13 a couple times and all of a sudden, you know, doesn't get another chance. Next in line, how about Doug Marrone the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars. They already blew out Tom Coughlin. We know that it's unlikely he's going to be brought back. This is a coach who had the Jaguars in the Super Bowl just a couple of in the AFC Championship game, I should say, on the verge of a Super Bowl a couple of years ago with Blake Bortles. They doubled down on Bortles. That didn't work. Then they paid Nick Foles. That didn't work. I think Doug Marrone is absolutely gone, and I think it's a better chance he's out than anyone else on this list.
36-45 between Buffalo and Jacksonville. Only one significant campaign where you went like, 2017, Jaguars played pretty well that year. But back-to-back, 5-11s possibly coming up. After that, I don't see any reason to hang on to Doug Marrone. Plus, the guy that was keeping him there, Tom Coughlin's already out, so you got to figure a new head of football operation may come in and want to bring in his own guy. So I think Doug Marrone's coaching his last game this weekend in Jacksonville.
Yeah, been better than 6-10 one time now in five seasons as a head coach. So I'm with you. I think he is out. How about, this is an interesting name. He's supposedly on the hot seat, which surprises me a little bit. I know they've had a terrible year. Anthony Lynn with the Chargers. Do you think he is in trouble? Anthony Lynn last year was, I think, clearly the beneficiary of some talent, but did one of the better coaching jobs in the league. He's been with the Chargers for 3 years. They've gone, inherited a pretty decent team. They went 9-7. He got them to 12-4 last year, but the bottom fell out 5-11 as Phillip Rivers completely collapsed this season. Do you think Anthony Lynn, the former Buffalo Bills interim coach and coordinator, after 9-12-5 wins, will get fired by the Chargers?
I do not. But, I mean, I don't see any reason why he should be fired. I don't think what has happened there this year has been all his fault. They had the Melvin Gordon soap opera that dominated early in the campaign for them. Their defense has not played anywhere near as well as they thought they would. And Phillip Rivers has not played very consistently. He's been a turnover machine for the Chargers so far this year. I don't put that on Anthony Lynn. I put that more of a roster issue. I think he's built up enough cachet at 9-7 and 12-4. To be brought back for another season there for a team that has no home field advantage whatsoever when they head out there every weekend.
I'm with you. I'm keeping him. I think he's a much better coach than he gets credit for. While he's not a victim this year, it wasn't his team's best year by any means. I don't think he should be losing his job for it. Detroit's keeping Matt Patricia, it sounds like. Should they? He's had 2 years. They're 3-11-1. They haven't won in a couple months.
I've said all along, these guys that coach for Bill Belichick, when you go somewhere else and you don't have Tom Brady and the other players they've had, and you don't have Bill Belichick to bounce things off when you're a coordinator, it's a completely different ballgame. These guys have, for the most part, outside of Mike Vrabel's mild success now in Tennessee, everybody else, McDaniels, Cornell, and you know, I mean, these guys have had no success when they go somewhere else. Matt Patricia's roster's got a long way to go if they're going to be more than a three-win team. He gets a mulligan this year from Mrs. Ford because Matt Stafford obviously gets banged up and that derailed your season completely.
So neither of us are firing Patricia.
He's got 1 year to show me some progress next year. I can't fire him after the way this year has turned out for them injury-wise.
With Stafford not available, your quarterbacks are David Blau. And
it's been a show.
A Driscoll to be named later.
I know what I remember we were talking in the break. I know why I told you someone should have been fired for being on a pro football related network. He said, I really liked what I saw from Jeff Driscoll as a quarterback with Detroit. He should have been fired immediately the moment he said that.
He had one respectable game.
Right.
And but I don't know how you really like
this is a guy that at one point another team was trying to make him a wide receiver. Come on.
Anthony Lynn stays. So our list of guys getting fired include Shermer, Marrone, Garrett, and then I am getting rid of Kitchens. You are not. You could have as many as six, maybe even seven head coaching vacancies around the NFL with the two that we already have with Jay Gruden and Ron Rivera. Any of those names really quickly that you would consider as the head coach of the Redskins? Or let's say it this way. If any of these guys are hired, that you'd be excited that the Redskins brought them in. The only guy I would say that for is Ron Rivera.
I would definitely say Ron, and if somehow Anthony Lynn ended up on the open market.
Of the guys we fired, I'm talking about.
Okay, the guys we fired, yeah, Rivera would be the only guy.
Like Shermer, Kitchens.
I would not hire any of
Marrone,
those guys.
Marrone, Garrett, I think they would all be a mistake.
I want none of them.
I'm with you.
I want freshness.
G&D on the fan, couple of notes out of Redskins Park we can get to next. Also, a Minnesota newspaper listed the best moments of the decade in Minnesota sports. And one of the things they put on their collection of items, I think, is completely embarrassing and it's just a terrible look. I think you'll be really surprised by it. We'll do that next on G&D here on The Fan. Big thanks to all of you for listening on this holiday as we are now in that super weird gap between Christmas and New Year's where like 42% of people work but only 16% of the time. And then you got to do a bunch of math to figure out how many people are actually working at any given moment. That could be a great word problem for like some high school kid in some class somewhere.
High school, hell, I do my daughter's middle school homework with her sometimes, and she's got word problems like that.
They're already doing that stuff?
Oh, yes, dude.
Word problems.
There are things. Oh, no question.
But you just got to weed through all the words, write down all the numbers, go back through it. I loved algebra. Anything after that was just a pain in the butt. I took one math class in college somehow. That was the only one I had to take, and that was the best thing about my major. But that's how you know also I took a super easy
course
curriculum, you know, basically. Communications, journalism focus, a lot of papers.
Look,
if you didn't like
Herzog,
papers, you were in trouble.
Frank Herzog said when I was 16, he came to the Board of Education in Anne Arundel County. He said, if you want to be in broadcasting and go to college, major in something else because either you can talk or you can't. And if you can't talk, you need to have a degree you can fall back on and do something else. So it's great. Math class, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I don't know how I pulled it off. It was one class. The problem was it was my freshman year. I think it was my first semester, and I had to take it. It was like an 8:40 a.m. class. Oof. And as I got a little older, I realized I'm not taking any classes before 10 or 10:30, especially because I started commuting to campus and driving on, you know, Beltway and all that stuff. I was living in Alexandria. But initially, just the idea of, oh, I'll be done for the day at 1 or 2. That'll be so cool. I can be productive. I can go shoot basketball or something. Terrible idea. The one thing still I tell anyone when I talk to people who are about to go to college, you know, friends of our family or whatever, I always say, do not take morning classes if you can help it. Because you're at a point in your life where, A, you don't want to wake up. B, you're going to be out and about doing things at night, hanging out, kicking it with your buddies, whatever it is. You're just not going to go to that class as often as you should.
What
so don't,
time
don't
did
pretend
you have to
like
leave Alexandria to get to Fairfax for an 8:40 class?
I don't even remember. It was Braddock Road. It was a huge pain in the ass. I probably left at 7:30 or something, 7:45. But I also missed that class way more than I should have. So I didn't get as good a grade in that class as I should have.
Ed on Twitter says he wants Ron Rivera, and he hopes Kitchens get canned so he can bring Steve Wilks in as his D coordinator, switch to a 4-3, and keep Kevin O'Connell on offense.
Love it. I also think, by the way, there's a good chance they could go to a 4-3 regardless if they draft Chase Young. And we should talk about this later in the show, by the way. You and I were off-air kind of throwing this out there. But if they draft Chase Young at 2, I think from a personnel standpoint, if you went to a 4-3, you would have Chase Young starting at an end with some type of competition for the other spot, you know, where Kerrigan, if assuming he's back, which I think he would be, would start, and then Montez Sweat would work his way in with those two guys. I'd go to some kind of NASCAR package a bunch on passing downs where you have him and Kerrigan and Chase Young all in the field.
All in the field, yeah.
Two of them maybe standing next to each other. But then you have the two down linemen between them in the 4-3, and that's a rotation between Allen, Payne, and Ioannidis, where you could go heavy front. You know, you go with a five-man front on running downs. Now, you're not in that traditional 4-3-3-4 base look all that often anyway. But on obvious running downs, you could have all the big boys up front, Chase Young included. On passing downs, you know, maybe you kick, let's say, Allen off the field or Payne off the field for a snap or two, keep them fresh, and then you've got all your pass rushers out there. But I would have no problem with them going back to a 4-3. Clearly, you could stay 3-4 with Chase Young. It's not like he only is going to play in a 4-3. I just think from a personnel standpoint, because everyone says, oh, you're drafting too many first-rounders. First of all, this guy's better than the other ones you've drafted, supposedly. Those other ones are nice. They haven't made a Pro Bowl yet. And in the case of at least one or two of them, maybe they never will.
But
who knows?
What drafting Chase Young allows you as the new defensive coordinator to do, you can be so much more creative now in what you do with all of those pieces. Those are an unbelievable amount of raw pieces to sit down on a board and go, wow. I could do this with those guys. Whoever would be the new defensive coordinator would have a great time with those six guys to juggle up front right now?
I'll get into that story I teased because I want to pay it off for you here. The Minnesota newspaper, and one of the items they listed for the top sports moments of the decade in Minnesota. We'll do that on this Football Friday presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Charlestown in a moment. They've got every game, every bet for real sports fans. But Dan is in Annandale. He's a big Browns fan, I'm being told, which, by the way, God bless you, sir. What do you think about Freddie Kitchens? Did you agree or disagree? I said he's out. Pete says he stays.
He's gone. He's 100% gone. I was at the Ravens Browns game at First Energy this past weekend. He's gone, like 100%. If he goes, if he doesn't go, Juice and OBJ are definitely gone. He's gone. Like the whole stadium. First off, the stadium there's energy is a hell of a lot better than anything I've ever seen at FedEx. But other than that being said, I've never seen 60,000 people can't fire someone all at once in unison for an entire quarter.
That happened?
It was crazy. Absolutely.
Wow.
For the entire third quarter, everyone was just saying, fire Freddie, over and over and over again.
That's unreal. Well, I listened to, you know, I actually do it almost every week, funny enough. I've got the radio.com app, which you guys should have, and I bounce around occasionally to listen to some of the coaching press conferences. And I have taken a liking to listening to Freddie Kitchens on Mondays on 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland because of it's almost comical, to be honest with you. And I feel bad for the guy, but it really does remind me of Jim Zorn's last few weeks. And it's tough to listen to. It's awkward. It's cringeworthy. But I go back to the well as often as I possibly can. And I bring this up, Pete, to say I think he's out as well. It just seems like to me it would be an impossible sell with shouting matches on the sidelines every week and him wearing T-shirts. Pittsburgh started it. And the number of times they've had to now kind of explain away things he's done and excuse this goofball. You know, at the beginning, I was a fan because I liked that it was different. You hired a guy that looked like he just walked out of a Waffle House when everyone else is going and getting male models, basically.
That's a good choice, Waffle House.
Waffle House is delicious.
I'm definitely not a male model. I'm more Waffle House, that's for sure.
It has backfired, man, in a big, big way. All right, here's the story I want to get your take on. So everyone's doing this right now. I wrote a big piece for The Athletic here locally about the top moments and storylines of the decade in D.C. sports. We're closing a decade, right? Everyone's got their rankings, their lists. A Minnesota newspaper listed their top sports moments of the decade, and they only had five that they ranked, okay? One of the five moments that this Minnesota newspaper listed, days away from the start of 2020, the Minnesota Star Tribune, Vikings linebacker Anthony Barr breaking Aaron Rodgers' collarbone in October of 2017. They had five things they listed. One of them was a WNBA championship. One of them was the PJ Fleck era beginning to the success that he's had at the University of Minnesota. Another was Minnesota Twins related. It's a picture of their success in winning the American League Central Championship. Another is Stephon Diggs' miracle moment where they beat the Saints on the throw from Case Keenum. So
certainly qualifies.
That's four. The fifth thing is it's literally listed as Anthony Barr injures Aaron Rodgers. They put that on their top five. Forget how classless that is. Isn't that ridiculous?
It's ridiculous, but you know what else it shows you? A lack of real championship moments in Minnesota this past decade. Hadn't been a whole lot going on. If it wasn't for the Minnesota Lynx and the WNBA, they would not have much going on in Minnesota this past decade. That's why that ends up at number five. And don't think it wasn't lost on Aaron Rodgers, because he said it felt good to win in that stadium the other night after he was jeered leaving the field after breaking his collarbone. Said it feels pretty good.
I just cannot imagine celebrating that. It's not like Anthony Barr did it on purpose. He did nothing wrong. He was hitting Aaron Rodgers.
Just made a tackle.
Basically sacked him with his weight on him. In fact, that play is what started the rule where you can't land with all your weight on a quarterback.
Right.
Romo had broken his collarbone a couple times that way, and the league kind of said, that's fine. When it was Aaron Rodgers, they decided we can't do this anymore. And so they started the new rule where you cannot land with all your weight because you go down on the shoulders of the quarterback, and that clavicle oftentimes gets broken. But
think about Minnesota sports though, over the last 10 years, Grant. Not much happening.
No.
That's
right.
Why that play ends up on there.
Find a
We don't
a
have
big
that
touchdown.
Problem. I said this the other day. What cities could Santa have dropped new sports in because the teams suck? New York, not much happening. Minnesota, another one. Not much happening over the last 10 years.
It's not like you got to list 50 things, though. You could probably find five without getting to Aaron Rodgers breaking his collarbone because Anthony Barr tackled him. The Beltway Blitz is next at noon on Grant and Danny with Pete hanging out today. You are listening to The Fan. Remember, Carl Hagelin of the Caps at 12:45. Nick Sundberg of the Redskins at 1 right here on G&D.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.